There were no dam or spring upon our property. Each day I took the cows to water them at Hughes Creek. In a good year, it would have made a pretty picture, but in the drought, that creek were no more than a chain of sandy waterholes. It were across this dry river bed that Mr. Murray's heifer calf come calling out my name. I was very hungry when I heard her and knew what I must do. I'd never killed nothing bigger than a rooster, but when I saw the long line of the heifer's crop above the blackberries, I knew I could not be afraid of nothing. Her eye were a little wild, but she were Poll Hereford and very sleek. I later heard that Mr. Murray had made a great investment on her and potted her with corn and hay, which must be true, for there were no feed in any of his paddocks, and although he owned 500 acres, his stock was out grazing on the roadsides, finding what nourishment they could. I did not care. I bailed her up and led her down the creek into a thick stand of wattles with a clearing in the centre. She didn't like the rope around her neck, and she fought and bucked and would have done herself a damage had I not bound her hind legs and tied them to a wattle trunk. She began to bellow terribly. Soon she were trussed up like a Christmas chook, but I had no pity, nor did I have a knife. I ran up through the scrub to fetch one from the hut. Inside, my mother were occupied, trying to plug the spaces between the slabs with clay and straw, so I took the carving knife from beneath her very nose. She never even noticed. Said she, "There's one of Murray's beasts caught down the creek." I said, "You must be mistaken. I can hear it bellowing from here." I said I would attend to it and let her know. Within the year, I would have learned to kill a beast very smart and clean and have its hide off and drying in the sun before you could say Jack Robinson. But on this first occasion, I failed to find the artery. I'm sure you know I have spilled human blood when there was no other choice. At that time, I were no more guilty than a soldier in a war. But if there was a law against the murder of a beast, I would plead guilty, and you would be correct to put the black cap on your head, for I killed my little heifer badly, and I'm sorry for it still. By the time she fell, her neck was a sea of laceration. I will never forget the terror in her eyes. And this is how my ma found me, with the poor dead creature at my feet and my hair and shirt soaked with blood and gore. "We have beef," I said, "we'll feast on her." But my words was bolder than my upset heart, and I were very pleased she relieved me of the bloody knife. I didn't know what next to do, having not the faintest idea of how to butcher the heifer, and yet not wanting the privilege to go elsewhere. My mother took my gory hand and led me across the dusty paddock to the hut, and after tying up the dog, she ministered to me with soap and water, all the time berating me and saying I were a very bad boy and she was angry with me, etc., etc. But this was for the benefit of the other children who was listening at the door and watching through the chinks between the logs. My ma cleaned me so very gentle with the washer, I knew she must be pleased. Of course, Annie could be relied upon to tell my father what I'd done before he even got the saddle off his horse. He'd been delivering butter to people with English names, a job that always put him out of temper. So when Annie showed him the dead beast, he came inside to give me a hiding with his belt, a mark on my leg I carry to this day. When it were dark, he took a lantern down by the creek and skinned and butchered my beast and carried the four quarters back across the paddock one at a time, and then burned the head and hung the hide and cut out the MM brand so none could accuse us of stealing Murray's heifer. He salted down what meat would fit into a barrel, and the rest he ordered my mother to cook at once. All through this, Annie would not speak to me. Even Maggie kept her distance, but very late that night, we had a mighty feast of beef, and I noticed it were not just my excited brothers who ate their fill. 2 days later, I was sent home from school at lunchtime to collect my homework, which I had forgot again. I found a strange bay mare tethered beneath our peppercorn tree. It had VR embroidered on the saddle cloth in silver, Victoria Regina. I knew it were the police. I entered the hut and my father was sitting in his usual chair, watching a lanky, fair-haired constable spreading out the heifer's hide across our table. "Come on, John," said Constable Doxy, putting his hand right through the hole where the brand had been. "John, we know what's missing here." "As you can see," said my father, "I slaughtered a cow and made a green hide whip." "Ah, you made a whip." "Correct," my father said, but did not protest or struggle against the accusation. "So be a good fellow, will you, John? Bring me the whip." My father did not say nothing. He did not move. He stared at the constable with puffy eyes. Perhaps you never made a whip at all. Oh, I must have lost it. You must have lost it. I'll bring it up to you as soon as I find it. More likely it were the brand, John. Did you cut out Mr. Murray's brand? No, I made a whip. Did you ever hear of Act 7 and Act 8, George the Fourth, number 29? I don't know. It's a law, John. It says if you duff another fellow's heifer, then you're going to go to adjectival jail, and you can bring me any adjectival whip you like. But unless it can fill this hole exactly, John, you're going in the adjectival lockup. We don't like Irish thieves in Avenel. I can't bear prison. My father spoke as plainly as a man who don't like Brussels sprouts. Well, that's a shame, said Doxy as he moved towards him. I'd done it, I said. I thrust myself forward. I put my hand on Doxy's hard black shoulder belt and he rested his hand upon my arm. You're a good boy, Jim, said he. I'm Ned. I done it. The policeman asked my father, is this so? But my father would say nothing. He were like some creature drugged by spiders. I turned back to Doxy, demanding he arrest me, and he laughed, ruffling my hair and smiling a foolish sentimental smile. Pack up your things, John, he said to my father. You can bring a blanket and a pannikin and a spoon. I done it, I said. The brand were M.M. Shut up, my father says, his eyes now alive and angry. Shut your gob, go back to school. Thus were my father taken from me, handcuffed to the stirrup iron of Doxy's mare.